Check this out. I only have 5 spots left already for Elevate 2026 at the time I'm recording this. I only invite 10 men each year to go with me on this epic year-long coaching adventure of brotherhood and deep transformation, and this is my 6th year. If you've heard of Elevate before, or maybe this is the first time, but you're wondering whether this might be for you, know this. The men who do Elevate have typically achieved some level of success in their lives, yet still feel unfulfilled. They're men committed to rising above the distractions and compulsions, sabotaging them from living their fullness as men. And they're eager to be better husbands, better fathers, friends, bosses, just better men in truly meaningful ways. Elevate 2026 includes personal coaching with me for the entire year alongside a select group of men going through this experience with you. We also meet in person for an epic 5-day retreat in the North Carolina mountains about halfway through the year. You will be challenged to go beyond your comfort zone, but that's where the magic happens, where real change happens. And you'll be stepping into an inspired brotherhood with men who have your back and who will become your brothers for life. This journey helps you connect to and more fully live your deepest life purpose, more fully offer your authentic self, your unique gifts to your loved ones, to your community, to the world. Intrigued? Learn more. And if you dare, apply now at brianreeves.com/elevate. Now, this isn't for everyone, but if you think it might be for you, apply now. Just take the next step. This could be one of the greatest gifts you ever give yourself. 1 year. Real brotherhood, radical growth. Go to brianreeves.com/elevate. That's Brian with a Y, reeves.com/elevate for details and to apply. Remember, I've only got 5 spots left, so do not delay. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to Bridging Connections, formerly known as Men This Way. I'm your host, Brian with a Y, Reeves, former U.S. Air Force captain turned author and professional coach to men, women, and couples. Alongside me as co-host, my lifelong friend of over 40 years, Tate Arendt. Here we have the raw, real conversations we need to be having about the topics that matter most: relationships, purpose, health, spirituality, and more. Please subscribe to stay connected. All right, let's dive. Hi. In today's episode, I'm offering something deeply personal, something I've only offered once before on this show. And depending on the feedback, I might start sharing more of this. Like, seriously, if you send me a message, email me at brian@brianreeves.com, or even better, leave a review on your favorite podcast app. Let me know, is this meaningful? Because you see, for the last 2 years, I've been meeting every other week or so for an hour with 4 brilliant and insightful men, including 2 wise elders who've been on the cultural front lines of mental health, psychology, spirituality, men's work, and really all matters of the human soul for a very long time. Our conversations are always personal, just 5 men gathering to talk about what's really going on for us, what we're each working through. We reflect on our challenges and sometimes talk about current cultural issues, and we really flow wherever else the heart and curiosity takes us. Now, I've sadly had way too few truly wise elders as a consistent presence in my life. Maybe you can relate to that. And so this time with these men is so precious. And these conversations are always rich and so real and always moving on a soul level. And so I asked these men if we could start recording our conversations, these meetings, and if something particularly profound came through that day, whether they'd be okay with me sharing it on this podcast as an episode. And they all emphatically agreed to that with a resounding yes. And well, this past Tuesday was such a day. And so here I am, inviting you in to listen to this intimate and inspiring conversation. In this conversation, I'm joined by the wise elder, Larry Winters, a poet, playwright, psychotherapist, and Vietnam Marine combat veteran. Therapist and coach, Mikey Brackett, who has an excellent grasp of Jungian depth psychology and archetypes. A man named Troy Ravenseye, who always brings gifts to each of our conversations. And my mentor and wise elder, John Lee, therapist and author of the classic book, The Flying Boy, and one of the OG pioneers in men's work. In this dialogue today, A predominant theme is the dance between working hard to make things happen in life from a forceful, egoic place and allowing things to happen by first getting into internal alignment with spirit, with God, with the Tao, with your higher self. It's a beautiful, raw, real conversation between men who lead this kind of healing work by staying committed to being in the work ourselves. So welcome. May this conversation stir something ancient in you.
Well, I'll start with the good news. It's been a while since I've had any. I found as big of a shithole place as this is, I found the most beautiful place I've probably ever lived, except for the time that I was at Mikey's place. There's this beautiful spiritual retreat center out in the woods, out in the mountains, about 15 minutes from here. And it is a gorgeous, gorgeous place. And they have an apartment, a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment that I've rented starting January.
Ah, wonderful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And it's an incredible place. If I had the money, I would buy it, buy the whole place. It's a big, beautiful house. It's got a writer's cottage on it, wow. A yurt, meeting space, meditation place.
Wow.
And they own like 11 acres, and all through the acreage on your walk is these really beautiful shrines that they put up to sit by Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, Japanese. It's just lovely. And the beauty of the place is only matched by the beauty of the thing that happened with the landlord. So the landlord's 75, same age as I, roughly, and he and his wife, and sort of the whole tenor and tempo of the retreat place is sort of based on Osho's teachings. They were members of that in India.
That's going to be perfect for you, John.
Yeah.
All that frenetic energy jumping around all over the place.
Yeah, not so much. It's toned down quite a bit. It's a calm energy. Then so he's interviewing me. So what do you do? What do you do for a living? Are you retired? And I said, well, you know, I'm a therapist and I've written some books, and we're going on with the interview to see if he's going to rent it to me. And then he said, so what kind of books do you write? And I said, well, self-help, psychology, personal growth, men's issues. Men's issues? Yeah. I wrote a book years and years ago that got me in the men's thing. And he jumped up literally out of his chair. And he said, are you the John Lee who wrote The Flying Boy? And he started weeping. Weeping.
Wow.
And hugging me. And I'm going, what the fuck? You know, I mean, we were just having a interview here. And he was weeping, and he sat back down and he said, back in the early 90s, I read that book. I bought my father a copy of that book. And then he and I went to a men's gathering together in San Francisco.
Wow.
He said that book changed me and my dad's life for the rest of our life.
Ah,
Wow, what a testimony, testimony, John. Wow.
Yeah, but what a synchronicity, as much as anything. I mean,
sure.
That book is 43 years old. Nobody thinks about that book anymore much, you know. And and so his wife comes in and she sees him weeping. And he's trying to explain to her in between the tears what had just happened. And and so I was deeply touched, to say the least. And of course, I got the house, got the apartment.
That's beautiful.
Well, you,
so are you going to be up in the Black Mountains, John?
No, the opposite direction, sort of.
How far from Nashville?
This is this little town called Weaverville, which is about 15 minutes from Asheville. And it's just so beautiful. The place is called, y'all can look it up on the thing and see it. Called Samosati. Mikey, do you know how to email them that easily?
Sure. Yeah, I could do that.
I had Mikey's address, sent it yesterday, because we were talking back and forth. If you would send them that link, there's a video of the place and pictures of the place.
John, what your story, what's happening for you is reminiscent of what it reminds me of and reassures me of. Did you guys ever see that movie Castaway?
Tom Hanks.
I love that movie. You know, I'm so struck in that movie how he spent 4 years on that island. Right, 4 years alone, not sure if he'd ever get home. And then, you know, as he's telling the story later after he's gotten off the island, he says, and then one day, and then what did he say? And then one day, something like, the ocean sent me a sail. You know, life brought me a sail. Just out of nowhere, a piece of that corrugated metal washes up, he's able to turn it into a sail. And I just think about that a lot, because I think, John, like, you've been on a voyage, John, for this last couple years now, right?
Yeah.
Since you left Austin.
Well, I left Austin almost a year ago.
About a year.
Yeah.
And you left, and man, I mean, I think we've all gotten a text here or two from you saying, this is the worst decision I've ever made in my life.
Right.
It's like you had to spend some time alone on a really barren island, and now, you know, life has just sent you a sail and is bringing you home to somewhere that you know, you just everything's aligning, and I can see how lit up you are and how relieved you are, and you know, and even the community that you're going into, and yeah, it's true. All of Osho's adherents, they're all older now, so they're chill.
That's right.
More of the group sex orgy stuff.
Yeah, it's more like the remnants of Osho's, but the teachings are there. Matter of fact, the owners, the man and woman who own it, are selling this property, and they're moving to Greece, where they have a property and an Osho community of elders live there. And so the caveat to my good luck is they're trying to sell it, and their caveat about selling it is the person or people who buy it have to maintain it as a spiritual retreat. And so while the owners are sort of in my vest pocket, who the new owners might be, who might say, no, we got other needs for that apartment. But this is the kind of place that would take probably another synchronistic event to find somebody who could shell out $1.5 million. And turn it and keep it as a spiritual retreat.
Right.
So I might have it 3 months or 3 years.
Right, right, yeah.
So anyway, yes. That's my good
lots
news.
Of good news, man.
Yeah.
Happy for you.
Yeah.
It's real good news. So I just got a comment a little bit. So have you ever heard of this guy Red Hawk?
I've heard of him. I haven't read anything.
So he wrote a book called Self-Remembering.
Uh-huh.
And then Self-Observation. And he says you have to remember yourself first so you can observe yourself, which is
right.
So it's a lot of different teachings he has in here. But what's interesting is he quotes OSHA a lot.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I knew I read one of his books years ago, and it was like, well, okay. But here's something he quoted OSHA saying. Ordinarily, we are walking bundles of solutions to problems that no longer exist. Everybody is so. You are carrying thousands of solutions for problems which are no more existent, and you call it knowledge. It is hindering your capacity to know. Seriously. It is not knowledge. Drop all the solutions that you are carrying. Drop all the answers that you are carrying. Just remain silent. And whenever a question arises out of that silence, you will hear the answer. It will not come from you. It will not come from scripture. It will not come from anywhere. It will come from nowhere, and it will come from nobody. It will come from your innermost nothingness.
Wow.
I was like, damn, that was good.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. I thought that was really nice.
Troy, yeah. That reminds me of I was working with I'm working with a Jungian therapist, and yesterday in our session, he told me a story about the Rainmaker. You guys know about the story of the Rainmaker?
Tell us. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna condense a 20 minute conversation into to 60 seconds, but the Rainmaker being the a man in China who would go into a village where there was a drought, and to help them, to help the rains come. And he would go into this village, and the villagers would say, what do you need? He would say, just give me I just need a hut, just a small hut. Okay, what do you need in that hut? Nothing, just a mat, just I need to sit in a hut. And he would go and he would sit in the hut, and he to get right with the Tao.
Yes. Right?
When things were out of balance, the Tao was out of balance. I guess this is extremely condensed story.
Nope.
He would go and sit in the hut to just get right with the Tao and to allow the rains to come, not force them to come, not make them come, but allow the rains to come by just getting right with the Tao. And that's what I hear in the story you just shared. Mm-hmm. You know, and that came up yesterday in our session, because I'm in a season like where my business, this is a hard season for the work that I do and the business that I do and the period that I'm in. This is a hard season because I have to do a lot of generating. At least that's the story, I believe. That's the lot of generating, a lot of productivity, especially at a time where my body wants to go inward. It's winter, right? I told you guys, it's like 55 degrees here in California. It's fucking freezing. Like I just want to go inward. And so we were talking about that, you know, just really the probably the most vital work that I can be doing right now is I love what you just wrote about because I think I have all these solutions.
Yeah.
Right. I know how this has to be done. This is our sixth year doing this. I just got to do it like I did in the past. And I'm already exhausted by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Already exhausted by trying to implement the solutions I already carry in my body, and they don't really work. They're not working anyway. You know? And the temptation is to double down, go harder. But I don't know, man. So yeah, I really loved what you just read. It's very
It's beautiful. And you know, I do not know where or who, but I heard that the rain story within the last 30 days.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know where it came from. But
confirmation.
Who Yeah, but I, as you were telling, I thought, I just heard this story.
Wow.
It's such a good story because I think it permeates this idea of alignment, right?
Yeah.
Not so much the solution comes from your intellect in your head, but it comes forth through being aligned with nature, because that's what he's doing. He's sitting there in nature, you know, this guy talks about nature, and he gives this example from this Sioux medicine man that said, if you're disconnected from the earth, you'll go crazy. And, it got me thinking, about attachment theory. And we think about attachment theory mainly from an infant to its mother, right? And then what happens if there's insecure attachment? There's problems, right? And yet so many people are not properly, say, secure attachment to the earth herself. And so this guy was talking about how our mind is constantly splitting everything, splits us from our bodies, splits us from the earth. The big belief is that we're separate. And he says, until you really grieve the belief that you're separate, you can't move on. And I was like, wow, man. First you got to accept the idea that you're not separate. In my mind, I can intellectualize, right? I'm not separate. But there's still this inner sense that I am. In any given moment, I'll fall back into separateness, right?
Well, he says, if you're not connected to the earth, you'll go crazy. As a collective society, we've gone crazy because we're not connected to the earth.
And that's exactly what he says, John.
Yeah, and the consequence of that is we're destroying the very thing that we're not connected to. If we were connected, we wouldn't be crazy, and therefore we wouldn't be destroying what we're connected to. But we're not.
I think there's another way to look at it and not use Earth, which for me is pretty big, huge to think about Earth, but my body. As I age, there are things that I cannot do whether I want to or not. And I have to surrender to that. Mm-hmm. And I have to listen to the messages that come through my body, which are not always ones that I want to hear, but I have no choice at this point because the body is giving me messages all the time. And that's my focus lately, is to listen to what it is trying to tell me, which is pretty much what you're saying, that I have to surrender to the reality that I'm not going to live forever, that I have to wake up to what I'm being told, which is simply to be present. To be present. Present in my body. What is it telling me? Because it's not confusing. My brain is confusing, but my body isn't. And that's the choice of that I take. Because when I hear the world or the nature, and this is a huge thing. And my body is part of that.
Right.
Troy, the reading of the connected to the earth, in a way, that's minimizing the connection, because really the expanded version of that is connected to the universe.
Sure.
Not just the earth.
Yeah. Right.
But the planets and the stars and the sun, that's the bigger connection, that maybe one has to be connected to the earth before they can reach that connection.
Mother Earth, Father Sky. That's
it's one
of the big transitions most middle-aged men eventually have to make, is this, leave the father and the mother. And then the father and the mother is the earth and the sky.
Very good.
You mean the father and the mother become the earth and the sky? So transitioning away from the human, the human reliance on father. Father.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly, Brian. Exactly. And so aligning with those energies, right? And then aligning with your own, as Larry was talking about, your body doesn't lie. So, you know, and I mean, it's like even lately, and when I go to bed, I've been having this practice about just touching my entire, like touching my feet and say, thank you, feet, touching my ankles, touching my legs. Thank you, legs, you know, and really trying to not take my body for granted, but begin to really recognize that it holds wisdom like the earth does. And it can teach me and it gives me messages all the time. And sometimes I think, oh, that hurts. I don't want it. Let me take a pill to make it go away, or I need to fix it. But what is it really trying to tell me? Right.
Right. Or my favorite is, that hurts a little bit, but you can do more. you're not serious. You're not, they're not really feeling that pain. Just keep going. And next thing I know, I can't use my arms. That's my version of that.
I told my doctor I'm having some cardiac issues pretty big time. And so I asked her to give me some medication. And she says, so I'm really glad that you are not suffering and that you're asking for help with this stuff. And I said, I said about a year or two, maybe I shared this with y'all. I said about a year or two ago, I had a physical problem. I can't remember what it was, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to pretend that I'm a woman and I'm going to call the doctor. she said, what? I said, I said, you know, I just pretended I was a woman and that I'm not going to suffer with pain and I'm going to call the doctor. And I said, that's what I'm doing now, is I've been in this painful thing for a day and I'm not going to go to, I'm going to just pretend I'm a woman again. And that's why I called and made the appointment. And she said, well, that's brilliant. I said, because women will not let their arm hurt for 5 days, you know?
Right. But, so it's not to fool the doctor. It's to fool yourself.
Exactly. You know, a woman says, oh, I got a pain in my shoulder. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to call the doctor, you know, and check it out.
There's a reason my wife has overriding authority on our dog's health.
Same thing.
Same exact thing. Yeah. The dog would probably be dead by now if I if I had, you know, majority vote on whether we take the dog to the vet, if it's throwing up, if it has, you know, has an injury. Yeah, she has the, because I'll just you know, put some Windex on it and move on. She'll be fine. that you know, her paw will grow back.
When I worked in the hospital, every group I had, there were at least 14 people in it, and probably 10 of them are women. That was pretty average.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
They asked for help.
Right. Ask for help.
That's the ratio.
Ask for help.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the voice for me, Brian, that comes up all the time says, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. It'll be okay. And you can handle it.
I did. I did a video last week of aging and asking for help. And I don't know. Mm. Y'all probably didn't see it, but it's just a little short.
I didn't see it, actually. I loved it. I saw it.
Oh, did
you? Great. Yeah, good job.
Little video. And 6,000 people viewed that video.
Really? John, congratulations. That's amazing.
Now, it didn't turn into business or money or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was shocked, you know, shocked that the message seemingly hit a nerve, you know.
Yes.
About men I didn't really focus on men, just aging people need to ask for help, and then they also need to be able to accept it when it's offered. You know, that really hit me big, that, you know, when people offer help, especially to us elderly people, which I can't believe I'm an elderly person, but the graciousness is to receive it and let people help, as opposed to turning them away. You know, because it's kind of like, you know, like Mikey, I said I'm going to be moving in January, and the first thing Mikey said is, if you need some help, let us know. And as soon as he said that, I went back to my own video and I thought, yeah, no, I'm going to have some. I could move this stuff by myself. I don't have very much. But why turn it down? No. No. And as I age and get older, I'm going to need more help, not less.
Yeah.
So I need to start practicing, you know. And Vijay said he would help with the move, and I said, "Yep, all right, thanks." You know, whereas I think even a year ago I would have said to Mikey and Vijay, "No, I got it. Thanks. It's not that much. I got it."
Right. Yeah. Well, I just want to offer John as well. What is overwhelmingly absent from social media are the voices of elders.
Now that's what Pat Love, my friend, said. That's what actually inspired me to do the video. I was talking to her the week before. She's 82. And I said to her, "Pat, you know, you don't let people help you a lot. You've been so independent." And I said, and I essentially said to her what I said on the video. And she said, "Now, this is the kind of thing that you need to post on video." And yeah,
good.
Because I've never done a video much before. And I would do little print things on Instagram or whatever. But I thought, okay. She said, "You need to put this kind of thing on video."
Yeah.
And did, and got 6,000 views.
Now imagine doing one video, you know, start one a week.
Yeah. And I think that's what I'm going to do. And then
maybe work up to 3 or 4 a week. Yeah. Just short, 60 seconds, little clips, little, you don't have to get all profound and crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
Just a little nugget like that, just dropped into the tsunami that is social media.
That's what she said. Yep.
Yeah.
Just let it do it. Let it go. Move on to the next.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Mikey, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I was fixing to ask the same question. Yeah.
I'm doing all right. We just had the holiday, obviously. And so just getting back into the flow of a regular week. And
did you have family at your place?
Yeah, my mom came up, which was fine. You know, she's a little Puella, so you know, in that regard, she's not a bad person or a difficult person, but she's just very young in the way she approaches things. So it's a lot of energy to entertain that. But overall, it's all good. But yeah, I think I've been committed in this season to trying to do like artist recovery, you know, like the artist way and things like that. And so I've been doing my journaling in the morning and stuff like that. And then what just continues to come up for me, and I think you said something last time, Brian, that stuck with me, of just like, I have felt like I've always felt like I was meant for more. I've always felt like I had something, you know, to bring forward. And in different ways, I've tried to do that. And I feel like the thing that's coming up for me more and more lately is, what if I stopped doing that in the way of trying to make the world, quote unquote, a better place, and like actually put a lot of that energy into me actually taking a risk on the things that I've had be like peripheral for so long. The more like overt art types of things, like music and poetry and everything, things that I've always loved and had like on the periphery, but how do I actually get into that? And I found that, like, as I've wrestled with that over the past months, it just continues to build this energy of like, I don't know, calling, purpose, whatever. But I'm way slower to try and define it in some way. I think one thing that I've struggled with is, and maybe even this speaks to what you were talking about, Brian, but it's like we have ideas for things, we have things we want to do, we have things we feel like matter, and then the almost immediate impulse I find that I struggle with is, okay, well, how do I turn it into something? I feel called to help men. How do I become a men's therapist? How do I do retreats? How do I da 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 da? Like, instead of just being like, what is this calling beyond that? Or I want to be, you know, I've worked in music production off and on throughout my adult life in ways that I wish were bigger, but I want to do music production. I want to write songs. I want to do this. Okay, well, how do I start a studio? How do I do this? And it jumps almost immediately to trying to make it into something or trying to put it into some sort of career kind of thing.
Yes.
And so I've been really trying to check that a lot lately and just try to hold this tension between work can be work.
Yes.
Calling can be calling. Artistry can be artistry. You know, if they all came together, cool. But the reality is they never have for me. And that's not meaning that they won't. But because they never have, I've missed out on each one of those things being their own independent reality. Because what has ended up happening is, well, now work has dominated everything. Or trying to figure out purpose has dominated everything. And unfortunately, throughout my life, the more artistic pieces has lingered in the background. And so, you know, wrestling with that idea of like, I know I have things to say and bring forward. The world definitely seems to give two shits about any of that. So what if I just release some of that maybe younger, more heroic need?
There you go, bud.
To
there
be
you
something.
Go. There you
and
go.
Then say, okay, well, I'm in my little office here in the woods, and I would be probably well served today if I cleaned it up and made it more conducive to just creating and, you know, just continue to focus every day on a little bit more creation, a little less trying to figure it out.
See, bud, you just finished the book that you've been thinking about for a couple of years now. He Wrote Artist. See, it's coming together in your life. You know, I was thinking, I don't know this is true, but I'm going to guess that most artists that have achieved some level of notoriety and success were not simultaneously trying to create art and figure out how to make money on it or how to get it out to the public. That they just created it and then stuff sort of happened or it didn't. You know, like Van Gogh, it didn't until it did. But I imagine, you know, take somebody, one of my favorite singers, James Taylor. I don't imagine at 18 and 19 when he was writing those incredible songs when he wrote in his youth. I don't imagine he was simultaneously thinking, now how do I package this and get it to the marketplace?
And by the way, for every James Taylor that succeeded, there's 100 that
didn't.
That's
right. That's right. And they still kept creating though. My best example, personal example, is I had a roommate and friend back in college, and he decided that he was going to be a poet no matter what. And he has taught English as a second language for 40 years, just enough to pay the bills, just enough for a little studio apartment. And that guy writes poetry daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, little chapbooks, little bits of reviews, but no way in hell could he sustain his life on the income that they bring, you know. But I always think of him as the guy that I wasn't, you know, I would think, okay, I'm going to do this now. Hopefully I'll make a living. And he just lived his poetry.
Well, I'm thinking of that's reminiscent again of the Rainmaker story, and does a monk meditating in his little room in a monastery affect the world? Right? Does he have impact on the consciousness of the world? And in the story of the Tao and the connection of all the oneness of all things, of course he does.
Yeah.
And though, Mikey, you know, man, you and I think are in very similar boats in the sense of, you know, you and I are, we're young enough to have been part of this internet phenomenon, but on the older side, that we didn't quite figure out all the structures and all the systems that, you know, the average 23-year-old understands. And on one hand, it's like, we have the levers of immense success and visibility and professional success. It's like, it just seems like it's right there. It's just a push of a button. If I just post a video, if I just do XYZ, blah, 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 then boom, right? And look, man, I've done okay for myself in that domain, but compared to where a lot of my friends are at, I'm fucking nobody. Like some of my friends, they've figured that shit out, and they've, you know, and even I hear from them that it's often like, how can they get more views, more this, more that. But the thing that's coming to me, Mikey, is, did you ever read that book, Illusions, Richard Bach?
Oh, wow, a long time ago.
Years ago. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The subtitle Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. That is, was the subtitle.
I forgot.
The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. And what I love about that book and why it's coming up for me now is it's a, you know, the short of it is it's a fictional story of a man who can do miracles. You know, he can levitate, like he can manipulate reality. He's a true enlightened master. But he spends all of his time in fields in Indiana and Ohio, and just giving, you know, nickel rides in his biplane to whoever shows up in the field. Like, that's all he's doing. And the story is kind of told from his sidekick, the guy who's, you know, Richard Bach, is the author. He's sort of telling the story and he's narrating and he's like imploring this Messiah, like, dude, don't you have a big message for the world. You need to go out there and give it. And reluctant Messiah is like, fuck that. He doesn't say it like that. He says it much more eloquently, much more poetically. But he's like, nah, I'm good. The world doesn't really want what I have to offer anyway. I would just be crucified. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, I think about that story a lot too, because I had that, similar to you, Mikey, I have that part of me that wants to go give the greatest gifts that I have to serve the world and do, my God, I have such medicine. And I personally take great comfort in that it's like, if I really, I guess if the really enlightened, awakened part of me knows that that's foolishness on some level, it's foolishness. Sure, do it, don't do it, but it changes. You know, it's in the end scheme of things, better to just be in my field and give nickel rides to the passersby in my biplane and give them a little bit of joy in the moment. And so wanted to share that. That's what came up.
Yeah. You know what resonates for me out of that, Brian, is you know. I think every man in this call has gifts they want to give, and good medicine. And what really resonated for me was what John was saying was, well, you know, I put out this video about asking for help and receiving it. Maybe I should take my own medicine, right? And so I think oftentimes we're so busy wanting to help everybody else, so we don't help ourselves. And we're not drinking our own medicine and moving ourselves along, right?
Yeah, this idea that, you know, as a writer, especially, I had to come to, and I feel like I have, is the world doesn't need another book. But if I write one, okay, but it's not like the world needs another book.
Right.
You know, and and the same thing is the world at this stage in my life doesn't need me to help it out. I can choose to do what I can, but it doesn't need me anymore. You know, just now again, that's in the 70s speaking, not my 40s or 50s. And I'm guessing Larry has a similar thing. He'll write his book and he'll get the book out, but I'm guessing you know that the world doesn't need another book.
And you know? I know it. I'm beginning to know it very well.
It sure didn't need my last five books. Sure didn't need my last five.
Which I think, you know, brings the question for me of like, what is it that I need? And I think all of us on this, I think all of us on this call can have permission to ask that question in some regard, because we're probably more on the codependent side than we are on the grandiose side. At least I know I am for sure. My tendency has been to take the more helping posture throughout my life, as opposed to taking the more, you know,
receiving posture.
Everything should serve me and serve my inflation. And
like that's never been on my radar. You know,
But
I could probably use to have a little bit of that as I pursue the things that feel you know, genuinely good at my core. To give myself more permission and give myself more clarity around, I can sit down and write a song later today, and that can be good, you know. Or I can cut out time and say no to this client because I want to do whatever. You know, I think I learned early on that, you know, the worth or the significance of what I had to offer was tied up in the impact that it had or the reach that it had. And I think our current culture definitely, you know, totally embellishes that wound for many people, especially with social media. And then, you know, I grew up in the Christian world, so it's like you have to go out there and make an impact. You have to go out there and do all this stuff. And it's like there's all this jargon around doing and being and you name it. And so it's like the reprogramming comes in to say, well, I've done a lot of shadow artist things my life, but now I can take the overt position and it can be okay.
Well, stop being helpful. You know, and just help yourself. There was a little commercial on TV a few years ago where this little girl, like a 3-year-old, is sitting in the back seat of the car in her little car seat, and father says, is driving, and he says to the little girl, he says, honey, are you safe back there and you're okay? And the little 3-year-old says, daddy, you mind your own business. And I'll never forget that commercial. Is at 3 years old, she knew what was her business and what was his business. And that all, you mind your own business, you know. And this idea that, you know, what you're asking the right questions for all of us. What do I need? You know, the poem, y'all may help me out here, the Emily Dickinson poem, where the line, bad paraphrase, if I've made one person's load lighter, that's sort of the lie. Not 1 million, but one person, you know. Then she's saying life has been a success. And everybody on the screen has already done that. To, you know, times to the 10th power, even.
I also think, Mikey, that all I do a number of things besides write. I make things in my basement. I do all artwork. I have written music. I have done a number of things, and each time I do one of these, it satisfies something in me, and it all sort of, I want it to come together so all of it is available, not just head off in one direction. And I think that you're perfectly set up for that because you've cultivated these things. You haven't let go of them. You've slowly, they're coming into view right now for you. And I think the more of those things you pay attention to, in the end, it's gonna make all of it better. All the songs you write will be informed in an incredible way because of all the other work you've done. The guitar that you make is going to be special because of all the different things that you've been available to you as you have evolved. And I think that's a way to consider it. Everything feeds everything. So Will Tegel said, everything in your environment affects who you are. The tree outside, the stone on the road, the raven that just flew over your head, all of this is part of the moment.
Yeah, you know, and I think part of what I hear too that I get caught up in, and you know, it just really sticks to my heart, Brian, is when you talked about the one potential client about, well, what are the deliverables, right? Oh, yeah. Which is another way of saying, how am I going to measure this? How am I going to measure it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we measure things through views, especially on social media. How many views you got? We're measuring, right? How much money did you make? We're measuring. How many copies of the book did you sell? We're measuring. And so, but what I will say is, like, John, you writing a book called The Flying Boy, and 43 years later, you're sitting across from a man that starts weeping as he remembers it. I mean, how do you measure that? Mm-hmm. You can't measure that. How do you, like Larry was saying about making something that creates meaning in your own being? You can't go down to Home Depot and buy that, and that creates that same meaning for you. I think that's what we're missing in our, say, in our masculine culture these days, is that creating and making gives us something inside of us that we can't go buy.
Yeah. I had a conversation about AI, and I've been thinking about how people are using it with my friend Peter. We talk about it a lot. And he says, basically, garbage in, garbage out. Mm-hmm. Creativity in, creativity out. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a mirror in some way. And then we began to talk about what we do with our hands in this culture. What young people are doing with their hands. Mm-hmm. They're on the keyboard with their hands. They communicate through the tips of their fingers.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep.
And in reality, if you use your hands in multiple ways, there's a whole lot of information that you're getting. When you make something, you know, I have to go in my basement periodically and just pick something up and work with it. And I got shit laying all over the place. I'll put things together. I'll do whatever I want. And that is truly the therapy for me. My hands, there's, I know where all the tools are. I know how to use the tools. It just feels good. And I'll come up and I'll show my wife what I made and I'll give it to some kid, you know. And that completes something in me that all this talk and all this figuring out doesn't do.
And my wife got me a bonsai tree for my birthday last year.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what that was in May. So what is that? 5 months ago, 6 months ago, 7 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's largely sat unmolested, untouched, uncared for. Mm-hmm. You know, in part because I didn't really know what to do, in part because I don't have the time. And just 2 days ago, a friend of mine who has like 20 bonsai at his home came over and started to help me get at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized it's like, I have to train myself to slow down to the pace of working with a bonsai.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, wow. There's so much resistance in me to it. And, which is why I know it's going to be also so good for me.
Well, that's my favorite Arabic quote that I quote ad nauseum. Haste is of the devil and slowness is of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, took me 20 years to begin to integrate that into my every part of my life. Don't do it all often, like even this house, I impulsively did it way too fast. But as I age, slowness to everything ends up a better result and a more harmonious outcome than when I do something speedy.
And it's I on an intuitive level, I know that the slowing down is going to serve everything in my life. But the you know, living in LA in the middle of the valley, being in the social media culture, that there's no such thing as a slow pace. There's everything is happening at light speed. And it's a subversive action to step out of that and just be with my bonsai. And I've not succeeded yet, just to be clear. It's a task that is still
Coming.
Yeah, to be gotten.
I canceled my AI subscription yesterday. It's like, no, I ain't doing this.
you made them $20 a month.
Exactly. That's what it cost, $19.95. No, $29.95, something like that. Yeah.
Win for the humans.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm. Well, no. Go ahead.
You know, the interesting there thing, Brian, I heard is that word resistance. And I deal with that a lot in my own life. Like every other day I go to the gym, and every other day I have this resistance to it. Mm. Oh, it's too cold out. I don't want to go. It'll be too much work.
Yeah.
But every time I go, it's better for me than if I had not. And so I'm trying to, sometimes it's like the resistance is built in and for whatever reason. And I could spend mental gymnastics forever trying to figure out where it is, why it's there. Mm. But then still at the end of the day, you know, I become through one choice after the other.
Yeah.
Well, this is a very simplistic view, but I appreciated it for years. This guy named Thaddeus Golas wrote this tiny little book, probably back in the 70s, maybe early 80s, but I think it's the 70s. It's called The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment. And the theme of the book, which I really do not live in black and white terms much, but the theme of the book is, we're either in a state of contraction or expansion.
Mm. Openness or closure.
Openness or closure.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, he's saying in his tiny little book that the goal is not only to be in expansion, but to recognize what we're still contracting around, you know. And one of the things that I've always been contracted around was money, you know, that it's very hard, and only recently have I started trying to expand in that realm, but to identify what areas of life am I still contracted in, and how do I move that to the expansion that he's talking about. That's sort of kind of a theme of what we've been talking about today in a way, in a different way, is, you know, where am I small and almost fist-like as opposed to palm open, you know, and money has always been mine. And I guess the other one is relationships. You know, contracted around that. I mean, Jesus, I haven't been in a romantic relationship in years and more years. Oh, fellas, what a great gift. What a great gift. What a great gift.
So good to see you all.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you all.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I gotta expand into a therapist and be a little counselorish.
Yeah. For
the next couple of hours.
You're warmed up.
Yeah. So good to see you all. Talk to you later.
See you guys.
Take care, my man.
Bye. All right. Bye bye.
Pleasure.
Take care.
Yeah,
and Mikey, not that you need permission from me or anybody, but I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you, but you have permission, man, to just go make music, and enjoy what brings you alive.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Right. I'm right there with you in my own way.
Yeah. Right.
Just fighting the same battle.
It's a doozy, huh?
It is, man. Right. Yeah. All right, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Mikey. Bye.